Welcome back, everyone, to Red Spotlight Entertainment for our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Reaction Commentary Series. I'm Alexis, of course, joined here by David. This is a show that is made for the longtime Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fan that wants to come back on here and talk endlessly about one of our favorite shows of all time. Obviously, in the middle of our rewatch, this is going to be already the seventh episode, correct?
Yes.
This is the seventh episode of season four. Basically, this is the penultimate episode of this arc, of the Ghost Rider arc. I am going to get into the intro just a little bit right now, but I do think it's pretty fair to say, I hope people think of it as one of the very best episodes of this entire show, the one that we're about to watch, because I certainly felt at the time, that this was, it kind of hits the ground running, and especially with the events that unfold and in the which way that they are presented, I have visceral memory about watching this in real time, and I can practically say that about all the episodes, right? Because this was, I say, this is the year I moved away. I was in college, and I was experiencing this from week to week. So I could say that about all the episodes of this season. But this one, damn it, this is one of the ones where it made me angry too, because I'm like, what do you mean? This is not regarded as one of the best shows on TV right now. What do you mean that this show that is able to produce an episode like this struggles for any little bit of airtime among the shows that talk about shows of this genre? When you have something like this episode of all episodes, I think wipes the floor with any, I'm sure any other episode that aired this week from a TV show of this size and of this genre, and maybe even of this whole year. I would even go so far as to say, look, I mean, very easily, I think this is one of the iconic episodes, certainly one of the defining episodes of this season, but I think also of the show. And it uses a formula that has worked already before with S.H.I.E.L.D. If you remember the season one episode, also one of my favorites, Tracks, where we have a little bit of a delayed. We're going to go back and see what was happening at this point. And in a way, we also see that with the time loop episode, As I Have Always Been, in the seventh and final season. So this formula really works very well with S.H.I.E.L.D. episodes. And go figure, personally, those three episodes I just mentioned from season one to this one in season four to the one in season seven, I believe, are among the very best that this show has ever produced. So it's funny because I actually was just on Google, and, you know, I don't know, I don't like the AI takeover, but you don't get a fucking choice. It just gives you an AI, it craps out something AI, and it gives you, like, an overview. So here, with unsolicited, this is what this says. I don't know how where this is pulling the information from, but this is what the AI overview says on Google. Deals with Our Devils is widely considered one of the absolute best episodes in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. history. It brilliantly uses a overlapping, multi-perspective narrative to reveal how the team saves Coulson, Fitz, and Robbie from an alternate dimension, ultimately featuring Mac briefly becoming the new Ghost Rider. And then he gives me a breakdown. And then why it's a fan favorite. This is what AI, I don't know where this is getting, this is what AI says. The episode masterfully balances thrilling action with deep, raw emotional stakes. The living agents' fierce determination to bring their friends back is a fantastic display of the team's loyalty and love for one another. The Mac/Robbie dynamic, fans and critics consistently point to the brief, tragic, and badass bond between Mac and Ghost Rider's spirit as a massive highlight. Okay, well, that's what AI pulled from, I guess, a few sources here and there, but, I don't know. David, you and I were not, I believe, I don't think we were on speaking terms just yet, in 2016. I think it may have been maybe late 2016, maybe early 2017, but we were watching the show at the same time, just not conversing with each other. I kind of wish we were.
I know.
Because I feel like we had it all there because literally nobody else in our crew gave a fuck. I mean, they watched it, but they didn't give a shit like we did. So it's like we should have had each other to talk about this show with. But I don't remember at the time anybody being as excited as me while watching this episode. I haven't peeked at the reviews written for the episode yet, but memory is not working right now as far as like how, but I don't believe people were regarding it then as it aired. Some of the best episodes, and in fact, I'm pretty sure some were quite critical of the formula that the episode was using. Go figure, right? As per usual. But yeah, this is to me, when I think of the show, this is one of the episodes that sticks out to my mind. David, before I get into the whole intro and everything, I assume you have similar feelings as mine?
No, yeah, for sure. This is for one of the best ones of the season. I don't remember what people thought about it, at least not from videos that I saw. And yeah, I feel like people's favorite episodes, at least from the people that I saw, it usually came about when the LMDs came up. That's when people really like were starting talking about their favorite episodes or what they thought was the best ones of the season. So maybe if some of them rewatched it, like maybe they'll think differently, who knows. But no, yeah, this is for sure one of the best ones. I love the situation that they're in, how they get out of it, and just kind of the way the whole thing interacts, and then everything to do with Mac. Like, it's all super fun.
Yeah. There's a lot of great character stuff that happens in the episode, which I always say, character first, and you'll see what happens. I almost feel like it's one of these episodes where it doesn't even matter the arc that it belongs to. I mean, obviously, it pushes the story forward, but I feel like you can just pluck it out of the arc, watch it, and enjoy it just fine based on what's happening here. And similarly, you can also, I feel, officially with this episode, we are turning the page on Ghost Rider and setting the stage officially for LMD, with what is, especially with the events of what happened in this episode, for sure. Okay, well, let's go ahead and get into it. This is Deals with Our Devils. This is episode 7, written by DJ Doyle, directed by Jesse Brocko. This was broadcast November 29th, 2016. A full 3 weeks to remind people after the last episode. Who could have foreseen ABC thought that the world needed a break to recover from the trauma of what happened earlier in that month? This episode was watched by 4.63 million viewers. Of course, it returns Clark Gregg, Ming-Na Wen, Chloe Bennett, Ian DeCastaker, Elizabeth Henstridge, Henry Simmons, John Hanna, alongside Gabriel Luna as Robbie Reyes, Jose Zuniga as Eli Morrow, Mallory Jansen as Ada, Lorenzo James Henry as Gabe Reyes, Arnell Powell as a scientist, not the, a scientist, Manish Dial as Vijay Nadir, and Jason O'Mara as Jeffrey Mace. This episode was nominated for Best Sound Editing in a Short Form Dialogue and ADR in Television at the 64th Golden Reel Awards, for what that's worth. Okay. Not too much on the wiki page here, but it's okay. We got plenty of more works to go on it with that. I feel like we're mostly ready to jump into this episode. Do we have any comments from last week?
Yeah, just one. Oh, sure. Oh, is this one? Okay. From Silva. Hello, fellow agents. Another superb episode. I want to start off with Eli's fall. He never read the book, but knew Lucy and Joseph had it. The fact that it existed and had immense power was enough to corrupt Eli. Then he went full psycho when Ghost Lucy made him read it. Now he's basically become the MCU version of the Molecule Man. Scenes with Robbie, Daisy, and Gabe were my favorite. Next two episodes are excellent, and looking forward to your commentary. Hope you two have a great weekend. See you next time.
Yeah, I feel like if there is... I mean, I feel it goes back to personal preference, I guess. But I would... If there's anything to critique, you could say it may be the handling of Eli Morrow in his turn, because, yeah, I don't believe he read the book.
No, yeah, we...
He knows of it.
We messed it up. I noticed it on the editing that he straight up says that he beat up the guy who had it, but he never gave him, told him where it was.
Yeah, he never and gave up where it was, basically.
Mm-hmm. So
So he never actually read it, and it didn't therefore corrupt him.
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel like they do give something of, I guess, reasoning for why he did this, but it kind of happens a little bit at the end, which for some people it's like, well, I'm not sure if that's a captivating enough reason for it, but I mean, it's one character. Sometimes the show, you can argue, shortchanges some of the villains. That being said, very clearly Eli Morrow is not a big bad here, so I feel like people are far more forgiving. But I do feel like this is the point in the show where, at least as far as minor villains are concerned, people I think might have some issues. I don't believe it bleeds over into major villains, because major villains, I don't believe, start having issues up until the sixth season, and even then, for the most part, they're pretty enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, give or take a few personalities. That's just something to keep track of, because up until this point, have we had underwhelming villains before, if that is the case? I'm thinking, well, we just came off of Hive,
mm-hmm.
and let's just say major and minor. So we have Hive, Gideon Malik, I guess, I don't know if you consider Hellfire a villain. I mean, mm-hmm. he was with Hive. There was, it was his name, Tebow, which was Ward and Tebow, which was like Ward's right hand guy. Was Jaing and Kel, Gordon, who was Jaing's right hand, Dr. Whitehall. I mean, there were some Hydra goons that, I mean, well, there's, you know, Bakshi, Dr. List. And then, of course, with season one, we had Garrett. And I guess with season one as a whole, there were a few one-off villains here or there. I mean, there was, I guess, Deathlok. But, I mean, as far as, like, Eli Morrow is concerned, and Lucy Bauer, for that matter, we've spent so much of this arc, I guess, at this point, with those being the antagonists to an extent. Although... That's just window dressing. I feel like, can we even consider Lucy Bauer an antagonist at that point? Because she clearly wasn't. I don't know how you feel personally about this, but, like, I mean, can you think of any villains that stick out in your head that are just, like, have not worked up to this? I mean, I forgot about Reyna. Mm-hmm. She was a big one, too. There's categories. There's like major ones, also side villains, minor villains. There's also like episode of the week villains. So it's like, I don't know. But as far as like if you're going to consider Eli Morrow the main villain, quote unquote, of this arc, and you put him up against a Hive or a Malik or a Ward or a Jaing, a Whitehall, Garrett, Ward. There, if you're gonna compare Morrow to those big bads, there's where I see a little bit of an issue there.
Mm-hmm.
However, that also is up to your personal interpretation, because really, if you consider season four all one huge arc, which it really is, then Ada is the main villain, and she's the big bad. And that's where you have those comparisons that are far more apt. I don't know. Do you have an opinion on this yet, or are you still kind of forming it as we go through these episodes?
No, I mean, out of all the ones that you named, I would say probably be between Bakshi and Lucy. I would say maybe more so Lucy, because maybe she could have at least done more. Well, no, I think she did enough damage to some people, making them crazy and all that. I would say the one thing is maybe just give out more information. As for Eli's like villain arc and all that, because I mean, she told Ghostwriter like, oh no, it was actually your uncle's fault and all that, but she could have just told the whole information. That would have been a lot better or something, or at the very least, like when she gives it out, maybe really show that she's a victim in all this instead of kind of still coming off as villainous. Oh, but she's corrupted by the Darkhold, so I don't know if that'll work. It's actually kind of interesting. Then I guess maybe Bakshi, only because he was just a secondhand guy. He was used by not only by Whitehall, but like by S.H.I.E.L.D., you know? They were just trying to get him. He was just there to get information.
We will see Bakshi again this season, if you don't remember. We do see him again this season.
Oh, yeah.
With Bakshi, you could say that the actor had more of a presence than Morrow. Morrow just seems to just kind of be there for the most part. But we will figure that out as we watch this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just go ahead and get into it. We have the episode. Let's go ahead and press play in 3, 2, 1, and go. Previously on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. All right, here we are. So keep in mind, at the time, like, this is a really good cliffhanger, because like, we were like, where did they go? I don't even give a shit that Eli had that thing in his hand. I'm just like, where did our guys go? And this is how we find out. They have no idea what he can do now.
Mm-hmm. And they don't know he's bad.
Yeah, that was nothing like a good old brutal death to begin the episode. Honestly, yeah. Yeah. Where is she?
Right?
See, this is where they do a really good job of like handling Mace, because like you totally would expect him to just like dismiss Daisy. He listened to what she just said, and then he made an actually good decision here. It's like, if Mauro could do that, what the fuck are we gonna do? We need our girl over here to help us figure out how to stop him. And right now, Mac totally get it. Like he's like, I mean, he's probably just like a mixture of anger and then also just like not sure what the fuck. I mean, I guess the idea of losing both Coulson and Fitz at the exact same time. Daisy, obviously speaking for the audience here, is just like, do you know what show we're on, guys? They can't just be dead. And then May right now is in a place where it's just like, you know, she hasn't fully said it out loud. And I don't think we as an audience have fully processed yet in this episode. But what is clearly happening here is that May is beginning to like allow herself to feel things for Coulson that she hasn't felt in a way in a long time. And she, you know how she is, thinking it's like, well, I guess that's it. And then she gets thinking the other way around. Well, if there's a way to save Coulson, it would be with Matt. They're this is what S.H.I.E.L.D. always does, right? They're both correct. About that. That sucks, kid.
And
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
there's so many good dialogue moments here. You just
Right?
mentioned everything with Mace and how he's leading the group and all that, taking priority on certain things. I mean, it just keeps showing you like he has the potential to be a really, really good director and all that.
Yeah.
That's just constant, you know, and it is the main character's fault, you know, constant blockages that stop him from that. And so, you know, it's really cool seeing this. And then I really liked, I mean, the bit of information of how the China crew dude met Eli and all that. Didn't really think about it. Even like on rewatch, I'm like, how did they know about this bug? It's like, no, we got that
Yeah.
information now.
Meanwhile, I wonder if anyone has had this theory. Mac is getting more and more enraged, and I can't help but wonder if the writer's kind of pulling that out of him as he's right here at this point. Writer's already in Mac.
Yep.
But Writer is trying to get the hell out of wherever Robbie is. And because of how close in proximity they are to Mac, I wonder if perhaps the writer is like summoning the hate, if you will, to transport itself from Robbie over to Mac, as we will see in just a few minutes. I mean, I don't doubt that Mac feels how he feels about it, but I think it's like one of those things where it's like it senses the anger, it senses the desire for, I guess, blood. Mm-hmm. And there we go.
Yeah, yeah. The first bit of dialogue was he's the one that mentioned that that the four of them are dead and they shouldn't let their deaths be in vain or something like that. So
yeah. That they were there the whole time. And, I'm like, holy shit, here we go. Now we're going to go back to all the places and see that they were there the entire time. It immediately just gets to like, okay, I'm sad. I'm sad for this whole episode. I love how Coulson always finds the time for some humor, and it always works.
Yeah,
honestly.
And I like how it works so well with their dialogue too, because like they're talking over them. It's like, wait, why aren't they like they also talking over them? It's like, no, they're on comms and all that. That's really good bit of joke.
Yeah,
and then I saw like how it took them a minute for them to realize too that they weren't actually talking to them.
Yeah,
Fitz and Coulson realizing they weren't talking. To Mac and May.
May. Jeez. How was that more vicious the second time around? Notice the dialogue. Or the sound is getting more distorted.
This is also kind of like the first interaction between Ghost Rider and Fitz.
Yeah, in a well, first, like I guess, like
conversation,
spoken word to spoken word. They've been in each other's presence before, but it's interesting how Robbie knows enough about Fitz at this point to realize he's the guy to go to for answers of this kind. Coulson's like, why is no one bringing up Simmons? She could solve this like that. And then I don't know if you noticed in the background, Robbie's already feeling a little bit uncomfortable, like in pain, behind Fitz as he was speaking a few minutes ago.
I wonder if they have any, if the writers, I mean, had like any other ideas of how to like work around this whole situation. Because I think it would have been interesting if like maybe if Ghost Rider turns into the Ghost Rider, he's back on their dimension and then like, or like in our own dimension and they can talk to everyone else. That would have been kind of interesting.
Yeah. You have to understand that from Fitz's perspective, what he just saw was pretty incriminating. Here we go. You'd say this is the first real moment we can see it, them influencing the regular plane. Although with this, when she says it's just a feeling, well, Phil, you kind of influenced that. I'm sure you did in a way. But when she, one of the things I kind of glossed over is like, what the hell are we waiting for? She's not talking about that bottle. It's talking about them.
Yeah.
And it's a real thing. It's like, what are you guys waiting for? Honestly. That was pretty creepy, I'm telling you. Bloody hell. Oh, God. What a mess of things. It's like the Spirit of Vengeance just like dipped, went into Mac, and now we have this sequence. Yeah, he might need it at this point. Radcliffe knows. It's like, wait, what? Yeah,
it's no way. I feel like May should have given more of a warning. You know, like, hey.
I'm sure May is like, I remember I was watching this with like my brother when this was like airing, and he was like, is she really going to give this to this guy?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you not?
And also, actually, to be fair with May, like, I'm sure she didn't expect him to turn evil in that split second that he looked at the book. So,
yeah,
like, I'm sure if she knew that, like, hey, this will corrupt him the second he looks at it, then, yeah, she probably wouldn't have considered it. I also love this moment with Simmons right here.
Again, growth in many ways. Like, again, Simmons asserting her dominance. It's like, look, I'm the bad bitch here. Get the hell out of this room. I know what's going to go on. But then even more than that, this was the person who was the most hawkish about, like, getting rid of Inhumans and calling it a plague and whatever back in season two or whatever. Mm-hmm. And now she's, like, the Inhumans expert, literally the entire team. Now, obviously, she had a lot of, you know, information from the records of Jaing and then, of course, Lincoln's involvement. But she is the head expert in Inhuman biology now because of what she's come through, what she's gone through, and what she's learned. And
a lot of the stuff that she deals with in humans, like, it's rarely science-based afterwards, like, after her whole, like, looking at them as a disease. Like, in this moment, she's not going like, ah, mate, you know, there's something wrong with his blood work or something like that. No, it's just, oh, this guy's scared. I'm going to calm him down. And that's how she fixes the problem. And then I know in when they go to the future, she helps.
Yeah, that one we'll in see human. It, the other one, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In almost the exact same way.
Yeah.
The way that she does this, like, can she hear what's going on? There really is no other way. Mm-hmm. That's just the thing. It's like, what else are you going to do here?
And,
like,
did you think, like, okay, maybe she won't get corrupted? Like, did you really think that? Because I kind of did. I was kind of like, okay.
I'm sure I was thinking they both would. And, I mean, with LMD and the arc that we're about to see, they do a lot of twists and turns where they keep you guessing what's actually happening. But I do think the Darkhold is able to corrupt literally anybody that reads it, right? So, yeah. I'm gonna say yes.
So cool.
Right. And now let's go back. Interesting, of course, emotional connections seem to carry a lot of weight through dimensions. See, that right there is just so creepy because, like, did she really hear him there?
Mm-hmm. It's... And they just showed Robbie being connected to a machine of sorts.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah.
And you can also say, like, this is the first connection between the two.
But notice
with
the
her.
Connections, though. We had May and Coulson, Robbie in the car, Fitz and Ada. Like, they're all linked directly.
I really like the camera work in that moment.
Yeah.
How the, like, I don't know if they thought of it before filming or what, but, like, the whole idea of, like, the darkness, like, overcoming them, and they had to keep getting closer to each other in order to, like, either even hear themselves and all that. Like, it just, it works so well.
It does, yeah. I'd be so pissed, man. Mm-hmm. Getting a bag over my head, like, as an entrance and an exit. And this is one of those moments where just like, I mean, come on. Oh man, it never gets old seeing this.
Mm-hmm. Also, like how his skeleton is different from Robbie's.
Yes.
This is also like the first sort of connection to Doctor Strange in that moment.
Yeah.
People were commenting about that.
Doing the portals before the portals were iconic, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Remember when Once Upon a Time started copying those portals? That was so funny.
Well, when you put it that way,
mm-hmm.
It's like, I mean, that's literally selling your soul to the devil there for pretty much all of time.
Yeah.
He's been in pain the whole time. The whole time we've seen him on this show, he's been mourning a pretty significant death. And I don't think it's something that he ever got over. Hope.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's 418.06. Yeah.
Way to skip the graphics.
Well, it didn't take long, did it?
Mm-hmm.
It didn't even take an episode.
And I was really hoping she wouldn't have turned evil, honestly. Like, I don't know what they could have done with her.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe... You know, with the Darkhold coming in, they're all getting into darkness of some sorts and all that, and she pulls them out in a way or something. I don't know. Like, this could, there could have been a lot of things. But, you know, oh, well. I mean, it's not, I'm not complaining, obviously. We got a great season out of it.
But... Yeah, yeah. But I see. Here's some Reddit comments. I kept asking myself why Radcliffe didn't reset Ada's memories of the day or something like that. I mean, he had to see this coming. Ada built a sling ring. Best movie tie-in yet. Yeah, Ada wasn't scary at all in the end. Not at all. Not Ada mapping a full human brain.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, watching Ada weave that quantum web was one of the most aesthetically pleasing things I've seen. My eyes, thank you. Once again, a great performance by Gabriel Luna. You could sense the hopelessness as he begged to get the spirit back. He is so good at portraying Robbie's many emotions. We're blessed to have him as our ghostwriter. Holy fuck, what an episode. Interesting. Using Mac as a way for the writer to speak to Robbie with us watching was genius, and watching things repeat to the eyes of Coulson, Fitz, and Robbie was great. Let's see here. Yeah. What the fuck? We waited 3 weeks. Now we're going to have to wait 3 months. Not necessarily 3 months, but it's just like, I think they took another, like, well, we'll see how long the break was. Robots doing magic? Yep. And then someone I think was responding to the, okay, so what the fuck, winter finale? You don't go out for a month and then come back for 2 episodes only. I know you've got the show in your kill slot, but show a bit of respect. So this is in reference to the fact that, look, they had just returned after basically a month. It was 3 weeks, right? And, oh, there are only 2 episodes left.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is just like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
I really hate how such a good show can be in a kill slot. This season especially has been fantastic. I feel like S.H.I.E.L.D. has only gotten better as it progresses. Oh, God. But the break after winter finale is 3 weeks, not 3 months this time. Well, I guess, okay, sure. That is something. Because it used to be longer. All right. Let me go over to IGN. This is Terry Schwartz. Several weeks after Doctor Strange's release, we finally got the payoff for S.H.I.E.L.D.'s latest movie tie-in. Fitz, Coulson, and Robbie were sucked into a space between dimensions, playing off the exploration of the multiverse in Doctor Strange. It's one of the more organic crossover concepts for the show and worked well as the show continues to muddy the lines between science and supernatural. And that continued to be a theme in this episode as a man of faith, Mac, got possessed by the Ghost Rider and Ada read the Darkhold. First, the Ghost Rider of it all. With Robbie in an almost alternate dimension, the Rider didn't want to stay separate from his quest for vengeance. That led to him possessing Mac for a brief period of time, but Mac's spirit of vengeance was fun. We get a hint of some of his anger at the end of the episode when we see him holding a piece of paper that says hope and the date, I think, 4/18/06. Given his and Robbie's team up at the end of the episode, chances are we're gonna find out a lot more about what the meaning of that paper is soon. But beyond that, the real conflict raised in this episode was with the Darkhold. The second they showed the book to Radcliffe, did anyone else have mental warning alarms screaming, "This is a terrible idea"? And of course, Ada was chosen as the best, you know, read-only person to the for the job. It was clear there wasn't a lot of forethought in that decision. Yet, yes, she can read the Darkhold, but it certainly will advance her in unforeseen ways. The kicker with her seemingly reconfiguring her own mind sets up potentially bad events in the future. Think Ultron. But I don't think S.H.I.E.L.D. is that obvious. My hope is that we see Ada become that ally, that S.H.I.E.L.D. she was designed to be, except now with her own agency instead of being controlled by Radcliffe. The parallel depictions of life playing out in the normal world and in the space between dimensions was a great storytelling device and a nice bait and switch partway through the episode after wondering when the show would reveal where Coulson, Fitz, and Robbie went. What a good idea to have them all along, albeit seeing the world from a different perspective. It was also worth noting Simmons' side adventure when she helped hatch Senator Nadir's inhuman brother, though it's unclear where that story is going to go. As an aside, I try to review TV shows removed from when and how they air, but I did want to note that it's a real shame this S.H.I.E.L.D. episode aired 4 weeks after the last episode's big cliffhanger. It really killed the momentum of watching the show live, which is only going to carry over into next week's mid-season finale. The S.H.I.E.L.D. team doesn't have any control over when the network chooses to air them, but the delay didn't help elevate this episode. Overall, Terry called it 8.3 great. Okay. Next, we have Alex McLovey from the AV Club. It's almost surprising it took this long for S.H.I.E.L.D. to get an episode where half the team can't see the other half. The "we can see them, but they can't see us" conceit is a sci-fi staple in everything from the Twilight Zone to Star Trek. But the real fun here was in watching scenes play out in the contrasting versions of reality created by Coulson, Fitz, and Robbie getting hit by the blast of Eli's machine. And to top it all off, there was an additional passenger along on that ride, one who didn't care much for being slowly dragged down to hell. When Mac first hopped on the motorcycle, punched out the S.H.I.E.L.D. staffer, and rode away in direct violation of Mac's orders, it felt weirdly out of character. So when it was revealed what had happened, the excitement was twofold. Ghost Rider wasn't about to just let himself be sucked back down, and Mac was now in possession of, or rather, being possessed by, the spirit of vengeance. Ghost Rider jumping into Mac's body made for a thrilling twist in an episode already infused with an appealing hook. And while I would have liked to have seen what happened had Mac retained the Ghost Rider persona, the team up between Robbie and him next week should help compensate for that missed opportunity. Gabriel Luna has really stepped up his performance, and for the first time all season, he almost felt like a part of the team. Being blasted into an unstable reality that slowly pulls you into hell seems like a good incentive to turn the crew, just to be fair. His confrontation with his normally demonic alter ego also showed why Robbie was a prime candidate for the spirit in the first place. We had a deal. Settle my score and I'll settle yours. He reminds Ghost Rider when the being tries to claim all the victims already killed are at the end of their arrangement. Meaning, even if they succeed in bringing down Eli, Robbie's work isn't finished. Deals with our devils outpaced any other installment so far this season by smartly foregrounding the emotional stakes for all the team throughout this crisis. And among the pathos on display, none were so ragged and so frenetic as Fitz's angry frustration over his inability to let Gemma know he was trying to get back to her. While his lashing out at Coulson was sidelined and chalked up to the rage he felt over not being able to communicate with Simmons, there was genuine anger at his former director for hanging up the mantle of authority to someone who the team doesn't trust. Coulson stepped down for a director who, quote-unquote, betrayed Simmons, Fitz sputters. His frustration with his old boss tangled irrevocably with his panic at the current situation. Going forward, Phil will have more than just his own feelings of uncertainty about giving up control of S.H.I.E.L.D. when the subject arises. He may have thought it was for the best, but his team clearly doesn't. But Coulson had his own emotional trauma tonight, as Melinda May violated every warning about the Darkhold in her effort to bring him back. He witnesses her conversation with herself, trying to battle the knot in her stomach, suggesting Coulson and the others aren't coming back. Daisy was right about the situation, but May is far too hard-bitten as a realist to not allow the possibility Coulson is gone. But then, she remembers the book, and all bets are off. There is an even deeper well of connection there than we assumed. I don't know if the show is teasing a romantic relationship developing between them, but the intensity of their feelings can't be denied, especially not after Ada triggers the doorway between the two dimensions and Coulson, losing his struggle to remain in this reality, sees and hears May calling to him. That moment of awareness triggers something in him, and he pulls himself back up through the gate. He cares about his whole crew, but May is the one who saved him no matter how much everyone else helped. Daisy, after all that's happened, still can't bring herself to admit that her place is here alongside her teammates. True. She's still technically a wanted fugitive, but aligning with S.H.I.E.L.D. is a smarter move in the long run than continuing to try and live off the grid. And when Mac goes AWOL, she steals Robbie's car without a second thought. When she heads off at the end, and the pause conveys far more than her actions, she wants to be here with her family, and she knows it. She just can't admit it yet. Ada, Ada, Ada. The android saves the day, but at the cost of imperiling everyone going forward. The secrets of the Darkhold are now contained in her android brain. And she's already busily fashioning herself some sort of brain-shaped creation using her newfound powers. Next week looks to be a showdown between with Eli and his new something from nothing powers. But we've already busy being prepped for our next big threats. Senator Nadir may think she's tough, and whatever powers have been given to her brother will undoubtedly play a role in what happens next. But frankly, an android with the powers of the Darkhold, assuming it knows what's best for us, a little bit more concerning. Stray observations from the article here. Speaking of the Darkhold, that book still looks stupid. We only had Radcliffe for 5 minutes, and not only did we get a stinger with him singing the blues, but we got a line like this: "I'm building an interdimensional gateway with an android I built. If this works, I could die happy." There's no way spending 7 months stuck in a teragenic cocoon doesn't make you a little unstable. Then again, maybe he just overheard some of whatever his sister's people were planning to do with him. Despite Mace's duplicity regarding Nadir blackmailing him, his heart still seems to be in the right place, and he's still a Boy Scout, at least when it comes to Mac disobeying him. Driving off against orders and with no helmet? He knows better. Dude, what? Robbie just saying what most are usually thinking when Fitz launches into tech speak. A great shot tonight when Ada is building the gateway and the camera rotates around the machine, first showing Fitz and Coulson's perspective and then shifting to the others. Minor quibble. The show's colors still don't pop enough. It should be more distinct if you're going to darken an entire version of each scene. And looks like we were right. Doctor Strange didn't have an impact on the episode despite the month-long break since the last one. Sorry, fans of Stephen Strange. No shout-outs from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So those are the reviews written at the time. Generally, positive reviews, but I think based on what we're seeing here, no one really saying, oh my god, what an amazing episode. I mean, they're saying that this is a very good episode, but not quite yet amazing. Let's go ahead and go over to Ami.
She's going to be a real girl. Okay. Yeah, shit. So who knows? Fuck. So, yeah, we had a fun little dance through the spectral plane. I'm glad they didn't drag that out. I'm glad. Though, I still am so annoyed that literally only Daisy was the only one that wasn't like, we don't know what the fuck just happened. And everybody's just like, nope, dead. Stop. In discussion. Dead. They're dead. No other options. Out of everything we've ever seen in our lives. That was literally stupid. Some people, like, they just rolled with it to get through the conversation. And then May was still in denial on her own way, even though it led her to the Darkhold, which in the end saved all of them. They wouldn't have been able to come back had that not been the case. And hell, it got to the point where the writer was like, hey, Robbie, been nice. And just, like, dipped. I didn't know he could just do that. Just, like, walk away. He was like, I'm not going back. You're going down. It's dragging you down. I am not going with you, buddy. Oh, God, that was so good. And I thought there was something off about it. I thought Mac initially getting on the motorcycle and, like, zooming off was just him just, like, getting sick of the red tape. Because even before the rider, like, hopped in, you know, he was very, like, pushy about pursuing this now. But maybe that was the writer the whole time. Maybe that was the whole reason Mac was pushing back in that moment. And I don't remember, has this hope thing come up before? Or is this the first time? Is that this coming to the surface? Because it's not ringing a bell, especially considering we got that specific date. Is that like the loss of his parents, a sister, a loved one? He's lost hope. And I can feed off of that pain. But it was like April something 06, I think. If that is something that's come up before, I genuinely don't remember it. But like seeing him, like just like going off and giving them the chase. And then him ghosting out was wild. I love seeing that. And I like how, and I don't know if the writer takes a different appearance. I mean, obviously he clearly does. Based on who he is attached to. I've heard someone say that there are multiple Ghost Riders, which I know there are multiple people that have been the host of the Ghost Rider, but I was always under the impression that it is a single entity that passes on its power. He made this deal to help him settle all of his debts, initially Robbie's debts, and now because he doesn't want to go back in there, but he's clearly got scores he needs to settle, Robbie's like, hey, you help me clear up this one last thing, I'll help you settle all of your scores. Like, making the full-on commitment to cross off the writer's hit list? That seems like a job that could potentially last an eternity. Just seeing how everybody else was dealing with this very differently. Yeah. You know, especially with this whole, like, detachment, the way they were trapped in this other plane and, like, also trying to, like, that struggle of not being heard and, you know, getting to still hear what everybody else is thinking, talking about, and all these other things fits. Learning what Mace has done with Simmons and who he's now working with and whatnot, and getting just frustrated about that, because if they don't happen to make it back, the last thing they had going on in their lives was this trouble between them, this tension between them, and he wasn't able to settle that. That would have been the way they left each other. So, like, there was all this built-up fear, frustration, anger, all of this, that he was just kind of, in some ways, I think, taking a fair shot at Coulson for, you know, not standing up and not, you know, being the director. As we know, he had the option to stay director, but opted to not. And I think for, like, the survival of S.H.I.E.L.D. as an organization, yeah, it may have been the best play. But who knows in the long term? Who knows in the long term, man? But, you know, Simmons finally made it to where she was going. She found the Inhuman who has been encased in this. You know, they're not letting her know who it is, who she's working for, where she is. But she found out that he's just still in there. You know, there's heartbeat, there's activity, he's got vital signs, all the things. Just got to figure out why is his heart rate up? My first presumption would have been like maybe it's part of his inhumanness. Like maybe it's part of either the gestation or part of whatever his power is going to be. I was like, is he fast? Does he vibrate? Does he whatever? Something that would tie into the heartbeat. That was my initial reaction. But then she was like, no, he's scared. He's nervous. So she calmed him down. And once he calmed down, the cocoon started to crack. And then she started to take it apart. So I'm wondering because maybe he was afraid of coming out of that cocoon. As long as he was in maybe what he felt was unsafe environment. Especially considering we know how the senator, feels about Inhumans. Maybe he doesn't want to come out. Maybe he doesn't want to come out of there. Maybe that's why he feels nervous. Because all of those people that work for her are poking and prodding at him. The only person he felt comfortable around initially to let that guard down and maybe start to come out was to Simmons, who was like, hey, I've worked with people like you before. You know, we've been through this. I got friends that are human, blah, 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 blah. Melty felt at ease, and then the shell came off. And now, though, she immediately got ripped away the second his face was revealed. And now he's just, I would presume, unless he can reharden, like, he just puts the barrier back on. It's a self-defense thing. Maybe that's his power, is, you know, protection of himself or whatever. Maybe he, like, hardened his skin, does, like, a stone thing. I don't know. Or it's just simply now she cracked the egg. And now he's just exposed to finally face the thing he's been nervous of this entire time. I don't know, man. There's a lot of things surrounding that I got questions about. A lot of fascinating stuff with this, too, especially with the workaround with the Darkhold. We did, you know, we had Radcliffe read it, and he was like, he read one page. It was like, fuck, not even trying. Nope, get that away from me. Which kind of is surprising, because you would think, based on what we saw last season, he'd be all over that. But he was like, no, fuck that shit. Meanwhile, everybody else at this other lab was like, give it. Like, if they could, they'd be snorting lines of this Darkhold, man. Especially the fucking uncle here, man. Who can, like, I don't know, like, the whole idea was that he could create matter out of nothingness, but he seems very fixated on carbon specifically, as he made a carbon wall, a carbon spike, and I presume ripped the carbon out of the people that were chasing him. He very much so is fixated on the singular element. I don't know if that's just all he can control. I'm curious to see where that is going to go. I know it was probably for budgetary reasons and for us to kind of be in suspense, but, like, I want to know what Robbie saw when he blipped away with the rider. Like, where'd he go? I know they said hell, but, like, where'd he go? I want to see it. I wonder if we get to go there. And speaking of, like, when they're being pulled into the void on the other side, too, it was like this glass mesh. Kind of like when Strange breaks through the mirror dimension. It's like that, but like a dark abyss in a way. And speaking of Strange, the portal that brought them back looked like a technological recreation of the sling ring effect almost. But the fact that Ida was their workaround, you know, no human mind could process all of this data and come out of it okay. So let's have her do it. Let's put the android to the test. Everybody now knows she's an android. At least our inner circle knows she's an android. That secret's out of the bag now. And she read it. And she's like, oh, all right, I got this. Here's your door, and they're back. And she could even, after reading it or whatever, or maybe, it was actually even before that, she was able to hear Fitz somehow. I still find it interesting that she can read it, but the undead can't. Or undead, as we have learned, they're not actually dead. They're just like this in this state of limbo, this in-between, as they say, this stuck between the two phases. You know, they stay there longer, they would remain as such. Though Lucy and all them, man, they're like, they were physically fucked up in their forms. So maybe that was a result of when or wow or how they got ghosted into that form. I don't know. But then now, like, I was thinking, I was like, I don't know where this is going to go with this whole android thing. Again, with this AI discussion, even though in their terms it's not AI, even though it is. But, like, now she's touched this knowledge and he's off drunk, going off celebrating. He's like, yeah, we saved the day, playing his guitar. Meanwhile, she's in the back there sculpting a human brain. Is that for someone else? Is that for her? Does she want to be real? Are we going to have a Pinocchio thing going on? And if
the answer
so,
to all those questions
is
yes.
Is she going to be good or is she going to be bad? I'm leaning towards bad. We never have good luck with these androids or these AI things, man. Vision was like a best case scenario. Plus, she touched the Darkhold. Something bad's going to happen. So I don't know what's going to happen there, but interesting episode.
Interesting comments there. David, I'm really, let's bring it back to us over here. A lot's been said. How do you feel ultimately about the episode as we bring tonight to a close?
It was great.
Right.
Just everything about it, the way it all moves, the conversations they keep having, and then just the way everything gets solved. You know, it's all nice and condensed. And especially with the conversations, like we kept saying, like, great moments with Mace showing like how good of a leader he is, taking certain priorities and everything. Even just a little moment, making sure Robbie's brother gets some help for this whole situation and all that. Like, those are just little
touches.
Little touches that we keep bringing this up, but like we just don't get stuff like that anymore with other shows because, you know, it's all six episodes. Or 8-episode series, and you know you're just gonna have to focus on the plot, and it's like we want to take our time, or we want to spend more time with these characters, and not just with this one too. Like even with the Marvel movies, you know, part of the reason why people like Age of Ultron is because there's so many good character interactions with all of them, and we can see that all day. You know, we can see a scene all day of just them trying to lift up Mjolnir, you know? And so it just, you know, it's all great.
Here's something I pulled up. This is Joseph McCabe for Nerdist. Call the episode S.H.I.E.L.D. at its best. This is what he says to begin this review. Of the three shows I recap each week for Nerdist.com, The Walking Dead, what season would it have been in 2016? It was definitely before Negan, I want to say. Mm. After Negan, I don't remember. I stopped watching.
That probably
would have
been 4 or 5.
I think, yeah. No. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
5 or 6, I guess. I'm pretty sure it was... No, I'm pretty sure it was at this point 6. The Walking Dead, The Flash, and S.H.I.E.L.D. S.H.I.E.L.D. is currently the one that I look forward to the most. Sure, it's a case of apples and oranges to compare three TV series so different from one another, but there's just no denying S.H.I.E.L.D.'s rambunctious energy, go for broke, bravura, and willingness to try new things with a minimum of fuss and precociousness makes it the kind of pop culture we all could use more of these days, and this episode is a perfect example. While other shows might labor for weeks to explain exactly how Coulson, Fitz, and Robbie were absorbed into a ghost dimension at the end of The Good Samaritan, S.H.I.E.L.D. hit the ground running, realizing that our main concern isn't how it happened, but rather the effect it has on the relationships with those from whom they've been cut off, specifically May, Gemma, and Daisy. So I wanted to bring that little beginning. It was like, yeah, interesting note here. How where it was, I guess, being compared to at the time. This is still, I believe, yeah, we said it was November 2016. And I'm pretty sure, as far as Walking Dead is concerned, they weren't too far off from the Negan thing. I think the Negan thing happened right after the election, which I think inadvertently helped kill the show. Because who wants to see that after the election? That I'll tell you, that's a whole separate podcast in and of itself, because The Walking Dead is an in a lot of ways it's not very interesting, but in some ways it is interesting of a TV show. But I do, You know, I went along with it for such a long time because it did catch my interest and I did enjoy the characters. But I've literally, like, the way in which they murdered Steven Yeun's character, Glenn, was so off-putting. I think a substantial amount of people just could not go back to it. And then the show started being noticeably not as good. So,
yeah, I mean,
that's all she wrote.
I really don't know why I kind of just stopped watching it. The Steven Yeun's character dying, like, that really did not bother me at all. You know, it was brutal for sure. But like,
yeah, it's one of the hardest things to watch I think I've ever seen on TV.
Oh yeah, it's rough, honestly, for sure. But that didn't make me go like, I don't want to see the show anymore. No, like, I saw that, it kept going. You know, the guy playing Negan, like, he's really funny at moments and all that, and you like him as a villain. But I don't know what it was about it that just, I started dropping off, you know. I think maybe it was just maybe getting a bit repetitive. Some people had a lot of problems with it. Like, some people didn't like how, when they got to that community in Washington, what's his name? Rick?
Yeah.
He was just like, either, you know, they accept us in or we just take it and all that. And people started getting annoyed that, like, he keeps going back and forth of, like, becoming the villains that keeps facing and all that to being good and all. But I personally like those moments. and so, I don't know. I really don't know why I kind of dropped off. It just didn't catch my interest anymore.
Can you believe it that it went on to have 10 seasons?
I know. It went on for a lot longer than...
Like, you talk about repetitive. I mean, like, well, there you go. 10 seasons? And yeah. Then there's, like, sequel films and sequel series. So it's like, is it really gone still? It's like, anyway. Mm-hmm. Again, separate podcast. Thank God we're not talking about that mess of a show. Anywho, we're going to go ahead and call it off there. Thank you so much for joining us today. Again, as always, leave a comment down below on any of the things that we brought up or that you want to bring up yourself with this episode. And we will catch you guys next time for the conclusion of this Ghost Rider arc. All right, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.